The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This investigation brought down the sitting National Security Advisor of the Trump administration. And it brought him down on the basis of a lie that he told to the FBI about a totally innocuous thing. He told them about something that they about information that they had in front of them on the basis of an intercept. Right? It's not like he had hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in his freezer, which he'd been handed by Kislyak, and he lied about that. You ask me where my red line is? That would bother me. He made an absolute innocuous lie of the kind that people in the workplace and in government make all the time. Do you think that Hillary Clinton told the full truth about to the FBI about her emails when she was being investigated?
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, January 6, 2018. It's part two of my conversation with Hudson Institute scholar Mike Doran, former Bush White House and Defense Department official and one of the few Washington foreign policy and national security experts who is vocally supportive of President Trump and dismissive of the Trump-Russia allegations. This podcast won't make a lot of sense if you haven't listened to the first part of the conversation, so I urge you to go back and listen first to that one, wherein we talk about Doran's more general attitudes toward Trump, the Never Trumpers, and the Russia probe. In this part, Mike and I talk specifically about the investigation, how he understands the Mueller probe, the behavior of the FBI, the Steele dossier, and the performance of the Justice Department leadership. It's the Lawfare Podcast, episode 274, Through the Looking Glass with Mike Doran, part two.
Is your contention that if the FBI used the Steele dossier or material in it, they wouldn't have used the dossier itself, but if material that came to them through Chris Steele and then developed investigative material out of that, that there's something wrong with that?
Absolutely.
What's wrong with that?
You're suggesting that Chris Steele is some kind of neutral collector of information
passing on, right?
This is information that was bought and paid for in order to tear down Trump, right? And in the middle of a hard-fought, of a very contentious presidential election, Lady Justice, with her eyes closed, has to be very, very careful before grabbing hold of something like that and launching an investigation on the basis of it. There are two things. You know, when I worked in the White House, I got, what's the name of the George W. Bush's ethics advisor, I can't remember.
Richard Painter,
right? Richard Painter, who's now, you know, emotionally anti-Trump. He used to call us into the auditorium in the old executive office building about every 6 months and give us a lecture about governmental ethics. And it's something I took home, I took to heart. She said, you're in a position where you have to behave ethically, and you have to behave in a manner that appears ethical. And the appearance of impropriety is an unethical behavior, right? So this is what we're dealing with the FBI. They have to have done things according to the book and in a way that appeared according to the book. And I think that at the very least, they failed to do it in a manner that appeared according to the book. But that's at the very least.
And so what follows from that in your view? So let's assume for a minute that some part of the roots of some part of this investigation, and we know it doesn't all come from Steele because the investigation was opened back in July as an original matter.
By the way, how do you know July?
Because Comey testified that in March that there has been an investigation since July of 2016. Mm. And he disclosed the scope of that investigation, which is now essentially the scope of the Mueller investigation. So assuming if you're right that some portion of some information that comes from Chris Steele feeds into that investigation, does that mean that the investigation, the subject of the investigation, has no merit?
Well, first of all, we need to know, right? Here's the interesting thing. There's a massive information campaign launched by the Obama administration round about December 1 to paint Trump as Putin's puppet, right? And we can get to that in a bit. Jim Clapper comes out and goes on Meet the Press or one of the Sunday morning shows and says there's no evidence of Trump-Putin collusion. No evidence, right? And then he also tells us something else, that there was no wiretapping of the Trump campaign, right? Which we now know is not true, right? So he tells us that there's no evidence. And all the air for a second, for one day, went out of the Trump-Putin collusion thing. Because you thought they made so much noise about this. There was enough evidence to launch an investigation and so on and so forth. Well, Clapper denied that. But there was all this noise about this. And then Clapper told us, no evidence. So from July until January, what is that, 6 months? You have the national security bureaucracy, which has, as you know, enormous tools at its disposal for investigating these things. And it's been investigating it aggressively, one would assume, or as aggressively as one can within the confines of the law. Hard for me to believe that Obama and his Department of Justice and his CIA wouldn't want to get to the bottom of this, right? And there was nothing. So from that moment, this whole thing should have looked suspect to everybody, but it didn't. They'd keep building on it and building on it and building on it. Now we're a year into this thing, and no evidence of collusion has been produced.
So I actually completely disagree. I'm actually completely disagree with the whole way you've described all of this. But on that, I am on that particular point. I think there's a great deal of evidence of collusion, and a lot of it is just out there in public, and people just keep saying that there's no evidence.
No evidence of collusion that was produced. We already said, you know, you're gonna say, what is evidence of collusion? Trump said, release the emails to Putin, right? Which happened before our eyes. Is that what you're gonna say?
Well, so I think that's a part of it. Trump said, I have nothing to do with Russia, and there's no Russian contacts with my campaign. Since he said that, we have learned of repeated interactions between Russian cutouts, operatives, representatives, and members of the Trump campaign in their capacity as members of the Trump campaign. We have, including the president's son,
manager. There's been no serious evidence of the major claim which brought about the Mueller probe, which is that there was some kind of quid pro quo. There was a crime. There was an agreement. There was a backdoor deal between Putin and Trump. And there's very little that we have learned of significance as a result of all of this investigation, right?
So I actually don't agree with that at all. Among other things, we've learned that the National Security Advisor of the United States lied to the FBI about his interactions with Russia. We've learned.
All right, let's follow the history on a little bit, okay? Because that's the most absurd thing in the world.
It is.
Totally, totally. Because Let me just ask you this. How concerned are you about the Logan Act? When you hear that there was an investigation of the Trump campaign by the FBI going on in the final days of the Obama administration, right? Because they were the Obama administration was living in fear that there were violations of the Logan Act going on. Don't alarm bells go off for you?
Yeah,
the Logan Act. So I'm not is a legal pretext.
Yeah, I'm not remotely concerned about the Logan Act, but I don't think this was about the Logan Act. I think this was about a pattern of contacts and attempts by Russian intelligence to penetrate the Trump campaign that were done over a protracted period of time, and then a series of meetings and contacts, including by senior officials, who were functioning as unregistered foreign agents and then did not tell the truth about the matter when confronted about it.
But the lying to FBI, right, was about the Kislyak conversation, right?
Correct.
So this is not some kind of shadowy counterintelligence. This is the Russian ambassador, right?
Yeah.
Right? So the Russian ambassador, and presumably, almost certainly, the content of that conversation between Kislyak and Flynn was fully known to the FBI on the basis of an NSA intercept of Kislyak's phone, right?
So, but Mike, I'm...
Wait, is that true? Did you understand? Is that what you assume?
I assume that the contacts of that the substance of that communication was known to the FBI, although they have not said that.
But this is so. This is what we're understanding: is that they have a transcript of Flynn's conversation. They went to Flynn 3 or 4 days after Trump takes office, right? And Flynn tells them something that's not true.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
And what on earth is wrong with that?
What on earth is wrong with what?
Within the context of investigating this bizarre series of interactions between the Trump campaign, and the Russians that... In the context of that, you have coverage of the Russian ambassador, assuming we did, and that you then ask about it.
So,
and expect a truthful answer.
No, there's nothing wrong with asking about it, and Flynn shouldn't have lied about it. In my opinion, Flynn shouldn't have even taken the meeting, right? But he took the meeting, and he apparently lied about it. But first of all, I want to know what the basis of the investigation was. What is it that they were investigating at that moment and came to him and asked him about that conversation, right? I want to know. It's important to me. I want to know to what degree the Logan Act was the legal umbrella under which they were operating. Because anything to do with the Logan Act, right? The minute you say we're taking action because we're concerned about the Logan Act, that is already an admission that you're carrying out you're using law enforcement for political purposes because it's a bogus pretext, right? Number one. Number two, this was an innocuous conversation with Kislyak. There's no quid pro quo. The whole idea that there was some kind of serious crime. This was Flynn engaging in the activities of the National Security Advisor, and he decided to stonewall the FBI and tell them a lie to get rid of them. But there's nothing more nefarious than that. He told the FBI a lie, but it doesn't prove collusion with Russia.
Okay, but Mike, I guess it's
the criminalization of politics and foreign policy.
So when I look at this situation, I see a pattern of activity involving the Trump world, including very publicly the president himself, including his business, which is, you know, we now learn is planning Trump Tower in Moscow, although that doesn't come to fruition. We see repeated covert attempts by Russian cutouts to contact, some successful, some unsuccessful, the campaign in a fashion that I think is genuinely unusual. And we have a Russian decision.
Can I stop you there?
Well, hang on. Let me finish. a Russian decision to release large volume of stolen emails in the midst of the campaign for the benefit, having told the campaign that they were going to support, as the Russian government, Trump's campaign for president. You look at this pattern of activity and you see isolated, irrelevant, non-collusive lies to the FBI. And the thing that outrages you is Chris Steele. And my question is, why does the pattern of Russian interaction with the Trump world not alarm you? What would it take, revelation-wise, for you to say, wait a minute, there was a serious counterintelligence problem, a foreign intelligence agency, what from a power that you're anxious about and that you are relying on red state wisdom to prevent the president from exhibiting instincts that you don't share toward, is actively seeking to penetrate the campaign, is probing it over and over again, is intervening in, you know, stealing large volumes of emails and releasing them in a fashion that is designed to advantage this campaign, and is telling the campaign that it is doing it in an effort to help the campaign. And by the way, the campaign, people associated with the campaign, are then lying to the FBI in its efforts to investigate. Why is this not an alarming thing? And why is the thing that you're gravitating onto in this pattern Chris Steele?
Okay, for a couple of reasons. First of all, let me take it point by point, because you raised a lot of things in one question. Were you alarmed when Barack Obama told Mitt Romney that the 1980s have called and they want their foreign policy back? When Mitt Romney said, I'm talking about in the 2012 election, when Mitt Romney said that the greatest geostrategic threat was Russia, and Obama rolled his eyes and the entire press corps rolled their eyes at Romney along with him. And at the same moment, when the Obama campaign was, at the exact same moment, was attributing the attack on Americans in Benghazi to an internet video that nobody had ever seen, and denying that there was any Al-Qaeda connection to that attack or any planning whatsoever by a hostile jihadi organization. Were you alarmed when Russia made a major muscle movement in Syria, directly related to the Iranian nuclear deal that Barack Obama had bent over backwards to achieve? And Obama turned around and said, oh, I think that Putin has got himself into a quagmire and there's nothing to worry about there. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that the Obama administration came in under the and launched a Russia reset, claimed that the Bush administration had totally screwed up relations with Putin, whom we could work with. Worked with him, bent over backwards to work with him, handed Syria to him, did nothing to foil him in Syria, did nothing, nearly nothing, when Putin intervened in Ukraine, right? All of this went by, and every time a Republican raised their hand and said, "We need to give lethal assistance to the Ukrainians. We need to push back against the Russians in Syria," we got the eye roll, the collective eye roll of the left. Right. And then we have also running up to the 2012 election, we have the hot mic episode where Obama is talking to Medvedev and says, you know, tell Vlad that I can't be as flexible right now because I'm up for re-election. But after the election, I'll be really flexible. Right. Should Comey have launched a counterintelligence investigation into collusion between Obama and Medvedev on the basis of that conversation? And you know what? Last night I just tweeted a story I had forgotten about the Obama administration actually taking Kislyak, the evil Kislyak whom Flynn had the audacity to talk to about sanctions. They took Kislyak and they put him in front of senators when they were selling the Iran nuclear deal so that he could say to them, if you don't vote in favor of the nuclear deal, then you're going to have a big problem with Russia. So they mobilized Kislyak on their behalf. When they were putting him, Kislyak, in front of senators to sell the Iran nuclear deal, should the FBI have investigated the president and his nefarious relationship with Kislyak? I mean, a lot of this is just politics, as all of this that you're describing, this nefarious pattern that you've seen is a nefarious pattern that we've been looking at for the last 8 years before that.
But Mike,
I want to go point by point. Okay, go ahead. We can argue about this one, but I got other ones that I want to talk about.
I mean, I just would say that none of those incidents that you describe involve a foreign intelligence agency penetrating a U.S. presidential campaign or releasing
hundreds of thousands of emails. We were talking about this investigation brought down the sitting national security advisor of the Trump administration. And it brought him down on the basis of a lie that he told to the FBI about a totally innocuous thing. He told them about something that they about information that they had in front of them on the basis of an intercept. Right? It's not like he had hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in his freezer, which he'd been handed by Kislyak, and he lied about that. You ask me where my red line is? That would bother me. He made an absolute innocuous lie of the kind that people in the workplace and in government make all the time. Do you think that Hillary Clinton told the full truth about to the FBI about her emails when she was being investigated?
Was she even
investigated under oath?
But why are you?
Was she investigated under oath?
But why are you by the way, most FBI and interviews are not under oath. It's a crime to lie to the FBI.
Okay, fine. Let me ask you something.
But do you
think that she told the whole truth?
So first of all, I have...
Do you assume?
I don't assume. I assume that the FBI conducts an investigation in good faith unless I see evidence otherwise. And I have not seen any evidence that the Clinton email investigation was not conducted in good faith.
Do you agree that a crime was committed when someone committed a crime when top secret information found its way on to Hillary Clinton's non-secure email system?
No, actually, I don't. I think a very significant security breach took place. But very few such security breaches are treated as criminal matters, and the Justice Department simply does not prosecute those cases on the basis of carelessness.
So carelessness. So look, what happened to General Petraeus?
General Petraeus handed, and I want to be careful how I say this because I don't want to say something about him that isn't true. My recollection of the indictment is that he handed his mistress his notebooks and said, be careful what you do with this. There's code word classified stuff in here. That reflects a level of knowledge and intent that simply is not
you
present
cannot,
in the
if
Clinton
you, if you
in the
worked
Clinton
in
matters.
No, if you worked in the government, anyone, I haven't talked to anyone, Republican or Democrat, who worked in the government, who's had a top secret SCI clearance, who hasn't been outraged by what Hillary Clinton did.
Because
information, anyone who's worked in this realm knows that information doesn't move from the classified system to the unclassified system on that volume by pure carelessness.
Mike,
somebody consciously stripped messages. You have to take it off of one system and put it on another. It's a conscious act, the same as the same as handing your mistress a code word classified. By the way, she had a top secret clearance as well, right? So we're talking about information from one person to another, right? And who he assumed would keep the secret.
Mike, what does this have to do with the question of how alarmed we should or shouldn't be by a pattern of Russian intelligence efforts to penetrate the Trump campaign?
Because no, we're not, you're saying a pattern of you have said there's this pattern of effort of a pattern of trying to penetrate the Trump campaign. I'm talking to you about how they brought down the national security advisor of a sitting president and created the impression in the public mind, for people who are not following this as closely as you and I are, of some kind of really nefarious connection between General Flynn and the Russians. Some kind of nefarious connection, which has never, ever been proven, but the impression has been created. And what I am concerned about is the vast power that our law enforcement and intelligence have, the vast information gathering capabilities they have, and their use of those capabilities to undermine an election, right? That is a huge scandal, much bigger than anything that General Flynn might have, much bigger than. He didn't do anything with Kislyak. That's the whole point. He lied about nothing, and his life has been ruined as a result. I'm saying that this is a politically motivated prosecution. There are people who have made lies that are much more egregious than General Flynn's lies, and they skated.
Okay, I want to turn to your attitude toward the current investigation and the way it developed, and also your sense of what should happen now. So
I want to talk to you about a particular leak, which outraged me the day I saw it. And I can tell you what day that was. It was January 12th.
I know which leak you're talking about.
Yeah. That leak, to me...
Walk us through what happened.
That is a leak from a senior White House official, I believe was the way... It's a leak to David Ignatius of the Washington Post of the Flynn-Kislyak conversation, about the Flynn-Kislyak conversation. Right, saying that some senior Obama official, I believe, I'd have to go back and read it, I think Ignatius identified it as a senior White House official, told him that Flynn and Kislyak had a conversation on whatever day, and that the administration was very concerned that it was a violation of the Logan Act, and they were very concerned that there was a nefarious Trump-Russia collusion going on the basis of that conversation. Now, three things. Number one, that is not a normal leak of the kind that
Correct.
We, right? That was a leak with an intent to create an impression, right? It was a leak in support of a lie. There was no nefarious collusion between Flynn and Kislyak, right?
I don't know that. I know he hasn't been indicted for one.
Okay. I'm going to bet you $100 right now. I'll tell you what. I'll go in for $250. Let's bet $250.
No, last of the big spenders.
We will never learn of some kind of serious collusion between Flynn and Kislyak.
So I'm actually not going to take that bet, not because, for the simple reason that I don't actually know what the truth is,
You do know a few things. You know that, number one, that we were told by somebody who saw the top secret transcript, or at least gist of that conversation, what happened. Right, and we know that they leaked it, and they leaked it in support of a lie. So that is two things, right? It is, number one, a crime.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely a crime. Has anybody been investigated, to your knowledge, for that crime?
So I assume there has been an investigation.
Wait, do you know for a fact that there's been an investigation?
No.
Why do you assume there's been one?
I assume it because it's precisely the sort of leak that would normally produce a crimes report, and I would be stunned if the originating agency of that intercept, which I assume would have been, depending on where Kislyak was at the time, would have been either NSA or FBI.
How come we haven't got to the bottom of it?
So let me say that I have no truck for whoever leaked that. And if that leak produces a criminal prosecution, you will not see me crying foul. I don't believe.
No, but what?
And by the way,
Hang on, let me answer your question.
Yeah, okay, Mike. Yeah. You will not see me arguing that there is anything inappropriate about that prosecution. And in fact, I have two reasons that are independent of one another to be very upset by that leak. One is, a national security reason. FISA wiretap acquisitions should absolutely never leak, full stop. The second is a civil liberties reason. General Flynn is a U.S. person, and we have the FISA to protect U.S. people against U.S. persons against political spying. And while I don't believe there was any reason, I have no reason to believe that was political spying, it was certainly political leaking of intelligence, and that's a dirty business, and it's exactly why we have civil liberties laws like the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And we've gone through a lot of years without seeing that sort of thing happen, and I don't approve of it. And if somebody gets prosecuted for it, that's fine with me. That said, most leaks, including leaks of highly classified material, do not produce criminal prosecutions. And the reason is not that the FBI is political, and the reason is not that the Justice Department is political. The reason is that leak investigations are particularly hard because we have this very strong norm against subpoenaing journalists and finding out all their metadata to know who they've been talking to. And so these are very difficult investigations to conduct. I will be the last person to say this is not an...
Do you think if we had Judy Miller here, she would agree with you?
I think Judy Miller was involved in a very unusual example that cuts in the other direction. The overwhelming norm is in the direction that
James
I'm,
Rosen? The fact of the matter is, I agree with everything that you said about that leak, right? But I want to add the two points you made. One, leaking classified information is a crime, and it should be investigated and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Number two, it was a terrible breach of General Flynn's civil liberties. Whatever you think of General Flynn, whatever he might have done wrong in other areas, right?
I agree with you.
Number three, and this is the thing that disturbs me the most, and this is the substance of the disagreement between you and me, is the lie that it was in support of. It was in support of an information campaign launched by the Obama administration to present Trump as Putin's puppet. That's what the leak is all about. And it created this widespread public perception of gross misdeeds on the part of the Trump administration that were not backed up by any factual case that the justice system has ever produced to the American people. Right? I have every reason to believe that that was a lie designed to damage the president by elements in the Department of in the Obama administration and in the Department of Justice who opposed Trump. That's why it should be prosecuted. And if a team of investigators was sicked on David Ignatius and whoever leaked that to him, and they could find out very quickly who it was, I believe, or I suspect that, you know, that they could find out quickly who it was. And they put the screws to Ignatius and the guy who leaked it the way they did to General Flynn on the basis of a completely inconsequential lie, we would get to the bottom of that crime. But that is not happening. Maybe the wheels of justice are turning very slowly in some recess of the government that you and I know nothing about. But to our knowledge, that is not being investigated. And that is the one that should be of much greater concern to us than anything Flynn ever said to Kislyak.
So in your view, this long pattern that so disturbs me of interactions between the intelligence services of the Russian Federation and the Trump campaign and its operatives is a minor set of blips. The Steele dossier looms very, very large, and this leak looms very large. How should we understand federal law enforcement? I mean, we have an FBI investigation that you are really not eager to give the benefit of the doubt to on anything. We then remove the FBI director, replace him with one of the president's choosing. The world still hasn't gone your way on these questions. We have an attorney general and a deputy attorney general. The president is very dissatisfied with, for different reasons, I suppose. And we have a special counsel who used to run the FBI. How should we understand the role that all these people are playing? Is it all corrupt? Is it all part of a Hillary Clinton?
No.
It isn't
a conspiracy in the sense that somebody back in July sat down and planned this thing out in this way. I think my working hypothesis about text from Peter Stroke to Lisa Page about an insurance policy is that they launched an investigation of Trump as an insurance policy against Trump, something to hold over him and to use, to leak on in order to validate bogus stories about collusion, right? By creating the sense that there was a lot of information, a lot of secret information that our national security bureaucracy had about Trump-Putin collusion, but wasn't at liberty to disclose, right? And they've been playing this game all along, and they continue to play it. Now, that hand pretending to have information or winking and nodding about having information, on the one hand saying, oh, I'm sorry, the rules of classification don't allow me to talk about this, but I am investigating it, right? We don't know exactly what the FBI has, but they've confirmed, our sources tell us that 75% of the dossier has been validated, right? That's saying, on the one hand, I can't talk about it, but I'm talking about it. John Brennan played this game, right? All along the way, they played it. Now, different actors are playing that card for different reasons. James Comey played that card, and that's why Trump fired him. Now,
why did James Comey play that card?
To hold on to his job, and probably to, I don't believe, by the way, I don't believe that James Comey was consciously trying to bring Trump down at all. I believe that Peter Stroke wanted to do that, right? It wouldn't surprise me to find out that Peter Stroke had such ideas. Possibly McCabe. Possibly. We don't know. We're going to find out at some point. Comey's a guy in an extremely difficult situation, right? He's got to launch this email investigation of Hillary Clinton in the middle of an election, when in all the context that you described. He's, as you know, better than I, the FBI is a very tribal place. He cares about the FBI, cares about the reputation of the FBI. He probably cares, he probably is a man of principle. He probably cares to a certain extent about rule of law and things like that. But in these upper reaches, he's being whipsawed by the political winds, right? And so my guess is that after Hillary, Team Hillary started beating on him, he threw him a bone and said, a couple ways he threw him a bone. One, he put together a team that would investigate her emails that was the most sympathetic team to her possible, in order to.
Do you think
he
did that
her?
Consciously?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
And you think at the point at which he gets...
It's like a law firm. When you run a law firm, right, a big communications firm. This is standard operating procedure, right? Even if it's mainly a Democratic firm, you have a number of Republicans on your team. So if a client comes in who has strong Republican sympathies, you take your Republican and you give him the Republican in order to put him at ease, in order to bring in business. Because in the end, what you want is the business more than the political cause. So I think he had a little cell I think he had a little cell of Democratic sympathizers, as opposed to your New York field office, which is probably the opposite. Either hard-nosed gumshoes who just don't like the way the thing is going, or they may actually have political sympathies. He put together a little sympathetic cell, and that sympathetic cell was in communications with lots of people around that Comey probably didn't even know about. That's the way I imagine it. This is my working hypothesis until I get more information.
You seem very confident of a lot of your working hypotheses. I mean, my attitude toward a lot of this stuff is I give our investigative agencies the benefit of the doubt that things were done according to the regular order until I see evidence that they're not. I think there's a lot of suspicious stuff about the Trump-Russia connections that warrants investigation, and I'm not taking your bet, for example, about what we're going to find out about
General Flynn. Because I'm going to win that bet.
Because I want actually to let the investigation play out and find out what we find out. You seem to have very strong priors about how the investigation got started, about what it's going to find, what's the underlying truth. And about what individual people's motives were within the government. And my question is, why are you so confident that you know what's going on here?
Well, I have working hypotheses. Like I said, do I know James Comey? You know James Comey personally, I assume. I don't know him. I'm just going on the basis of the information that I've read. And the information that I have, and I built up a picture in my mind of what I think the most plausible hypotheses are. And then I have modified the picture as more information has come to light.
How should we understand Rod Rosenstein? Sessions is irrelevant to this, but.
From moment one, After the election, once the Obama administration launched an information campaign against Trump on the basis of the collusion issue, and that is a campaign that was launched. When I saw that January 12th leak to Ignatius. For me, that was a fingerprint at a crime scene, right? It's not a normal leak. It's a leak in support of a campaign that was going on. There are lots of other elements of the campaign. We don't need to get into all of it. From moment one, when that campaign was launched, they were calling for Sessions to recuse himself, right? So that was a goal of the campaign. Another achievement that they got. Rosenstein, I don't have a great sense. My working guess is that, look, and this is one of the things that disturbs me. Washington, D.C. is a Democratic town, right? 96% of Washington was pro-Hillary. 99% of Washington was anti-Trump, right? You cannot work in this town and have pro-Trump feelings and not feel it socially. In very awkward ways. Friends that you had don't invite you to dinner anymore. Your wife doesn't get invited to her friends anymore because her husband is pro-Trump, right? The what I'm trying to say is that sociologically speaking, the sense that we have to stop this guy is a threat to the Republic, is very, very strong. I would be shocked if when I don't know Rod Rosenstein, I don't know him from Adam, but I would be shocked to find out that when he took that job, and especially when he wrote the letter firing Comey or justifying the firing of Comey, that he didn't come under enormous pressure inside his bureaucracy, socially, in every other way, right? To prove to everybody. That he is not the dirty agent of the evil emperor that he's being depicted as.
So you're describing Comey as perhaps well-meaning but ultimately corrupt, as in he puts together a a liberal or a Democratic-leaning team.
I don't think that's corrupt.
You don't think that's corrupt?
I think it's corrupt. That's standard operating procedure. No, no, not at all. That for a guy in his situation during the election, look, here's the thing. I was actually sympathetic. I believe that Hillary Clinton committed crimes. I believe that her team committed crimes. And I believe that the FBI, I'm talking about with the emails, and I believe that the FBI purposely
cooked an investigation to avoid bringing a case.
Yes.
That's right. Corrupt.
Wait. No. I was sympathetic to, I believe that at the time. But I was sympathetic to Comey when he did it. Because it goes back to that issue of, are you behaving ethically and are you behaving in a way that appears to be ethical? If in the middle of this very vituperative, controversial campaign, Comey had indicted Clinton, half the population, more than half the population. What was the, you know, what percentage of the electorate voted for Hillary?
50 plus, 53, I think.
53, okay. 53.
She won by popular vote by
3%. So 53% of the population would have said that the FBI threw the election. Hillary's saying it now, right? Which is ridiculous, right? But 53% of the population would have said that the FBI threw the election for Trump. Comey, who's a Republican, isn't he a registered Republican, or am I wrong? Or is he?
He used to be.
So Comey, the Republican, threw the election. I had enormous sympathy for him.
You're describing decisions not made on the merits.
Yes.
And you're describing in Rod Rosenstein's case social pressure leading to decisions not being made on the merits.
Look, we're in a very weird, when you get to the higher reaches of government and you have to make these kind of decisions, you can come up with legal justifications for what you do, right? But we're all human beings and we're all under pressure. If you know that if you make a certain decision and you come home and your wife is going to divorce you, it's going to create a mental state in which you're going to go for one legal decision over another. I'm not going to say that it was absolutely conscious on the part of Rod Rosenstein. We're talking about this whole thing about my relations with the Never Trumpers, right? I was amazed that I people that I respect, who are historians I respect, saying that Trump represents an unprecedented threat to the republic. I found that outrageous. I found it outrageous, but I wouldn't for a second say that they didn't actually believe it, right? Let's just assume that all these people actually believe, and they probably believed as well that he was in some kind of deep collusion with the Russians. I think it's totally delusional, all of it. Totally delusional. But if you actually believe those things, then you don't see yourself as corrupt when you make decisions like this.
What about Bob Mueller?
Bob Mueller, harder for me to read. It's unfortunate. One of the reasons I don't like special counsels is that special counsels always find a prosecution. These guys never go in. You know, Patrick Fitzgerald, Patrick Fitzgerald started his job as special counsel, he learned that no crime had been committed. Remember, I mean, we're talking about the Valerie Plame affair, where supposedly the Bush White House had outed an undercover CIA agent. And so we had to have Patrick Fitzgerald go and investigate this. And on day one, he found out that, A, she wasn't undercover, so she hadn't been outed, right? He should have packed it up on day one and said, nothing to see here, all done. But what? He went and he got a scalp, and he got Scooter Libby's scalp. And Scooter Libby wasn't even the person who leaked the identity of Valerie Plame to the Washington Post? I can't remember who it was to. Evans.
It was Novak. Bob Novak.
Yeah. Evans and Novak, they're one person to me. Where was Novak? Washington Post?
Yeah.
So to Novak, right? But he had to get his scalp. These guys are bulldogs, right? If they don't come away from the job with blood dripping from their teeth, they don't feel like they've done their job. So that's one of the things going on. And I think that the same kind of forces that are operating on Rosenstein or operating on Mueller. But then I would add probably other. I'm making all this up. But you asked me what I'm imagining. Why would I imagine that people would not do the right thing as I understand it in these circumstances? He's probably good friends with Comey. He probably thinks that Trump.
They're not good friends.
They're not good friends?
No.
Oh.
So this is a common myth.
Okay.
They're cordial professional acquaintances.
Cordial.
Who've worked
okay.
together.
He probably thinks that that Trump is tarnishing the image of the FBI, which he cares deeply about. You know, I can come up with lots of reasons. He may be operating in the same mental space you are, that there's this very disturbing pattern that he wants to get to the bottom of, right? And not the disturbing pattern that I see. I don't actually know what's going on with Comey, but I don't see any suggestion that Comey is looking at the full picture. For example,
you mean Mueller?
Oh, yeah, sorry, Mueller. I meant Mueller. Yeah, I don't see any. I don't see any suggestion that Mueller is looking at the full picture, as I understand it. We know for a fact that the Russians inject direct that Russian intelligence directly injected disinformation into the campaign and got it into the national security bureaucracy by means of the Steele dossier. I don't see him investigating that.
One more question, and then we should probably wrap up. If you were advising the president, given everything you believe, what would you tell him to do? How would you advise him to handle this situation?
Advise him to handle this situation.
I mean, should he fire Mueller, or should he remove the Justice Department leadership?
Emotionally, I want him to fire Mueller and Rosenstein. Ethically, I mean, or let's just say morally, I believe he has every justification for doing so. Politically, I think it would be a misstep. When's the right time to do it? I'm not sure. If they drag this thing out, the goal is to drag this thing out. The goal of the Democrats is they would like to see this thing go on through the 2018 elections, and then they would like to, on the basis of whatever Mueller discovers, they'd like to have impeachment in 2018. That's what I believe the political goal is. The question is, to what extent does Mueller want to play ball with the Democrats on that? Is he willing to wrap this thing up, you know, in the next 2 or 3 months? Or is he going to string it out well into the 2018 elections? And Trump has to make a political calculation. At what point do I take the hit, you know, the same hit that I took for Comey? I'm going to be accused of obstructing justice. And to what extent do I let this thing go on? Trump is a better politician than I am. He'll make that calculation.
Mike Duran, thanks so much for joining us. This was eye-opening.
Thank you for having me.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Thanks this week to Mike Duran for coming back to Brookings to have this conversation. If you haven't already tweeted about the Lawfare Podcast or shared it on Facebook, please do so. And if you haven't left us yet a rating on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever podcast distribution service you use, please get on that. Our music is, of course, performed by the one, the only, the Sophia Yan. And as always, thanks for listening.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.